Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast, your weekly dose of talking about watching soccer on TV, online and apps. Coming up on episode 72, we discuss Comcast and Disney fighting over Fox, which streaming provider the former head of ESPN has joined, coverage news about the English Football League playoffs and ESPN Plus, plus viewing numbers for El Clasico. Plus, we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, and I'm joined today by Kartik Krishnaya. Now, Kartik, you missed last week's episode of the podcast, and I'm glad you're feeling better, and I'm glad you're back, because it was hard work doing it all by myself.
Well, we appreciate the yeoman's work you do every week and the extra shift, and thank you. I am feeling better and ready to go for this week.
So physically, Kartik, you're feeling better. Mentally, I'm not doing well. I'm not going to go into this too deep, but I think one of the things about relegation that a lot of fans don't realize, especially for those clubs that don't go through the whole relegation battle, is that it's depressing. I mean, when this week I've been in a funk, I've been depressed. I mean, there's no other word for it. And it's one of those things that on social media, it's fun to joke about. And I mean, I got into it with Arlo White on Twitter a little bit this week, is that he was kind of saying like how funny the Saints tweet was about kind of their review of the hotel after the whole incident. And I just kind of, it struck a nerve, because I said, okay, well, it's not funny, because especially for the clubs involved in this whole relegation battle, yes, it's a laughing matter for if you're a neutral, but when it's your club, you feel it, it's really personal. And for a lot of soccer fans, they don't go through the experience of relegation. You know, I mean, they're supporting clubs that have been probably in the Premier League ever since it began, and in the first division before that. So it's a weird experience for those. I mean, you've experienced it, right, Kartik?
Yeah, I've experienced it multiple times with Manchester City. A couple observations. Well, first off, I think everybody who understands this concept can empathize with what you're going through. Secondly, I thought the Southampton commentary to TripAdvisor or whatever site it was to was incredibly unprofessional and incredibly petulant. I didn't find it amusing at all, honestly. And I didn't find it amusing, although this is part of Sparky's, and I have a lot of respect for him as a manager, but this is part of his MO, is to impart a victimization complex in players wherever he is. And I guess Southampton felt like they had to use the hotel thing and drone on about it to maximum effect in order to push the right buttons for their squad. I don't think this is something Mauricio Pellegrino or Claude Puel or Ronald Koeman, et cetera, would have done. This is a very Sparky-esque move. The third thing I'll say, Chris, is that as much as a proponent of promotion and relegation in the United States league system as I am, and I am, in fact, I'm to the point where I'm now beginning to get jaded about even watching the closed leagues in the United States, because there's no sporting merit, there's no open system associated with the U.S. Too many of the people who advocate promotion and relegation in the United States don't support a European club that has been through this, or don't support the club closely enough, or in some cases even disengage from that club when they've been relegated. So I don't know that they truly understand what supporters go through, what a town like Swansea is going through at this very moment, and understand that it's not all glory and roses, promotion and relegation. And when clubs get relegated, communities get affected, fans get affected, businesses get affected. There's a dark side to it. Now, I would take that over the closed league system we have in the United States, but it's not as glorious as some of these supporters make it out to be.
Yeah, Kartik, I mean, that was a feeling for me this week. I was like, you mean, it must feel great to be able to walk away from a club and say, you know what, I'm not going to support Swansea anymore. I'm going to support, I don't know, Manchester City, for lack of a better example. But, you mean, I've been a Swansea supporter my entire life. I'll be a Swansea supporter until I die, and for good or for bad, I'm always going to be there. But it hurts more. It hurts more when you're out of control. You're at the mercy of your players in the club, and you're just watching it But the other thing too, Kartik,
Chris, I couldn't believe the hostility. I just have to jump in. Sorry, because I forgot about this. The hostility I got last week when I put up a tweet about how terrible Man City's last relegation was, but at least we got King Kev, Kevin Keegan, who I guess 90% of the people that were decided to comment and attack me on the tweet didn't know who he was, but or what I was referring to. But we got King Kev out of it, and things worked out. But how horrible it was! And I got attacked by all these American pro-rel. A lot of them are hipsters, quite frankly, who have no idea what it's like to go through relegation. Like, well, how dare you say this and screw you and this and that. When I'm giving a personal experience about my club being relegated and what it felt like. It's unbelievable, some of these people, honestly.
Yeah, for me, I have no issue with Swansea going down. I think it's all based on merit. They haven't been good enough this season, and they've come close. They've done much better in the second half of the season than they did in the first. But at the end of the day, they're just not good enough. A lot of it is depth, you mean, in terms of looking at, which Carlo Martino did a great job for the Southampton-Swansea game. At halftime, Rebecca asked him, looking at the benches, which is the team that has the greater depth? And he says, there's no question about it. Southampton, they've got all these attacking players. Swansea had one attacking player, that was Tammy Abraham, who's had a poor season since about October. And that was the only option that Swansea had. So at the end of the day, I don't feel bad in terms of the way that they're going down. It's just the experience as a soccer fan. And for a lot of the listeners, they haven't gone through it, but some of the listeners have. And once you do go through the experience, you come out of it a different person, and it really is. Yeah, for all the love of promotion and relegation, I love the idea and the concept for sure. It's just as a fan, as a spectator, you're, and especially you just go through it, and it's depressing. The other thing for me that's depressing is that in terms of just the amount of accessibility to watching the championship, yes, with ESPN Plus, you can watch, 2 to 3 games a weekend, and with iFollow, you can subscribe to it for about $140 a season if your club is part of that program. But it's not like having games on NBC each weekend or having NBC Sports Gold. It's that's another part of it too. So that's kind of the realization that you're not going to be able to watch your team as much possibly as you did before, and it's more of a there's a distance between the experience of you watching it. There's not going to be tons and tons of people in bars across the United States watching it with you. But okay, Kartik, so let's move on from there. So that's my thing about Swansea. So at the end of the day, it's depressing, but it is what it is. We move on. So let's move on and talk about some other topics. And let's go through rather quickly, if it's all right, what we've been watching this past week. Anything stand out for you, Kartik?
Not really anything stood out beyond ESPN FC has a new studio and a kind of, it feels like a different format, although it's not really a different format, but a different look to it because of the change of studio, which I guess was meant to coincide with the launch of ESPN Plus. The timing, unless it's a coincidence, relates directly to that. Also, I've started watching Scottish football. Didn't really go through it last week because obviously I was out sick, but the last 2 weeks, Scottish football on Bleacher Report, and have been pleased with the accessibility of Scottish football on Bleacher Report and the coverage and the streams. And we'll talk more about Bleacher Report later in the show, but have to say this is a good thing for the Scottish football. I'm not sure if I'm the only person who's gotten excited that the Scottish League, which has not been accessible in this country except sporadically for the last decade, is now all of a sudden very very available and in our face.
Yeah, let me ask you one question about that, Kartik. What do you think about the clock that's on the screen that Bleacher Report Live uses? I'm sure you've noticed it.
Yeah, I'm getting used to it. The format was first a little funky to try and adopt because it has the minute stacked with the second. But now that I'm used to it, it's actually pretty useful. It's a little bigger than the score bugs that you're accustomed to on normal broadcasts, like an NBC broadcast or an ESPN broadcast. I'm now used to it. Now, the first game, which I watched on the platform, which was – it wasn't Rangers-Celtic. It was another game that weekend before Rangers-Celtic. It blew my mind, and I was confused, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. But now I'm used to it.
Yeah, I thought I'd ask, because for listeners who haven't had a chance to look at it or to check out Bleacher Report Live, it has the Scottish Premiership through the end of the season for free, and then starting next season you'll have to pay for it, as well as Champions League, Europa League, etc. But the clock is actually in a shape of a diamond, and it has, like, you mean, so if it's minute 89, it's a large number, and then right beneath it is in the seconds, kind of in a small kind of typeface. And for anyone watching a soccer game, it's kind of a different experience. It's like, I'm not sure exactly if they're just trying to do something different and have their own identity. Maybe that's part of it. In the next few weeks, I'm hoping to speak to Bleacher Report Live, the team, to learn more about kind of their thinking. But we can get more into that a little bit later in the next segment. So you saw Partick Thistle against Ross County.
Yeah.
How's the atmosphere and the crowds there for a Scottish Premiership match with two, you mean, not heavyweights by any means?
Yeah, it was okay. It wasn't look, I think what it resembled to me, they're smaller grounds, and there is some energy in the ground, but it's not like like some of the intimate grounds in the English Football League in League One and the Championship in League Two when teams are playing well. Now, it is like the grounds in the Championship, which more often than not happens, like Elland Road at Leeds, when they're not pushing for promotion and the place is too big to house a team that's now a perennial Championship side. It felt a little like that, even though the ground was smaller. But this was an important match in the relegation fight in Scotland, so I actually enjoyed it. The football isn't as terrible as people make out the Scottish League to be. At least that's been my impression. I've now watched three or four matches in the last 2 weeks, so it's not terrible. I don't think it's a whole lot different than the Football League, although of course there isn't as much at stake because you're not getting to the English Premier League or to the Premier League, what we call the Premier League, but. There is, I think, some pretty good football on offing, and we're seeing, at least in terms of the competition within that league, with Aberdeen having been as good as they've been the last few years, and some Scottish players now emerging, younger Scottish players, Robbo, Andrew Robertson, Scott McTominay of Liverpool and Manchester United, respectively, a revitalization of the quality of Scottish players ever so slowly from the low point of the last decade, the low point of the history of Scottish football. So I'm quite interested to keep an eye on the league. Obviously, when Bleacher Report Live starts charging, I'm going to subscribe, and I'll probably keep watching the league next season.
Yeah, definitely. Probably me too. If I can, it's just a matter of time, just a matter of being able to fit those games in. And with the Scottish Premiership, oftentimes is a game on the Friday. And of course, Saturday morning and Sunday morning. So I'll definitely try and squeeze some in there. What about some of the other matches you've watched, Kartik? Anything else stand out?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we're still holding out hope that there would be some sort of run for Napoli in the last few fixtures of Serie A. We didn't do a show last week, or I didn't do the show last week. I would have spent the whole show on on the Juve Inter game and just the that heartbreak. For neutrals, now I respect their Juventus fans who are very excited about how they've hung on and won the title this season. But I think neutrals throughout Europe wanted to see Juve not win a title, and also because Napoli has played about as good football as anyone on the continent this year. Maybe Manchester City would be the other team that's been really good to watch. But what happened in the last 10 minutes? Spalletti pulling off an attacker, bringing David Santon, who was possibly responsible for both goals that were scored late by Juventus, with Spalletti's Inter's coach now, not Roma's coach anymore, for those who don't know. Inter was up 2-1, 85th minute. They're down a man. Spalletti decides to pack it in. Juventus scores twice. At the point, Juventus was a point ahead of Napoli, and it looked like they were going to lose this match, and Napoli was playing Fiorentina the next day and could jump them. Juve wins in this dramatic fashion with two goals, one in the 89th minute and the winner by Higuain in stoppage time. The next morning, or next morning our time, Fiorentina plays against Napoli. Koulibaly, who's been, I think, the best defender in Italian football this season, gets sent off in the eighth minute for Napoli, and they end up losing 3-0, title over. So I watched Juve Bologna this weekend with the holding out hope that Juve would stumble. They didn't. BN has done a good job of giving us more and more Serie A matches toward the end of the season as the title race has been heated up. This is the first time, really, in the 5 years they've had the Serie A rights, or is it 6 years now? 6 years now that they have given the league this much focus. So I've enjoyed that.
But Kartik, I mean, the reality is that the reason they're giving it more focus is because the La Liga title race is over. And,
correct.
And that's the thing, though, too, that...
And PSG's title race is over.
Exactly. So it's to Serie A's benefit, and BN Sports should be applauded for making sure that they're showing kind of the big matches each weekend. But it's a pecking order, and we know that the Serie A doesn't get as great a viewing figure. For next season, will it be interesting to see where it goes to, if that goes to a Bleacher Report or an ESPN Plus or a streaming service of some kind? But it's been a great title race, and it looks like Juve winning the Coppa Italia. Again, they're picking up all the silverware, but it's been an exciting end to the season, for sure.
Yeah. The thing I will say about this is I'm expecting a reversion to form next year on BN, as you said, of La Liga being the priority and random, Malaga versus Getafe being on instead of the Milan Derby, for instance. I mean, things like that have happened for years on BN. Yep. So I'm hoping, despite how well BN did down the stretch, Serie A does have another media partner in the United States next year, and it's accessible and I can watch it, because I have to say, in spite of all the bagging on Italian football, I have enjoyed that league this season, and I cannot say I've enjoyed the other leagues. Again, this week my viewing was Premier League heavy, but the Premier League to me is not... look, and anytime you criticize the Premier League, there's like a lynch mob on Twitter that comes after you, so I guess I'm just going to stop. Right. But I think anyone who objectively has looked at the Premier League now through 26 seasons will have to say the last two seasons have been two of the worst seasons of the league's history. And you've got teams that are staying in the league. We're just spent half the beginning of the show lamenting Swansea going down. But there are 10 teams that could have gone down this year, yeah, that would have gone down six, seven seasons ago in the league. So I don't think the league is very good. I think the Bundesliga has dropped off substantially this year. I know there's a more competitive race for the top four spots than there have been recently, but I think the league's dropped off. La Liga has been okay, but it hasn't been as good as it's been. I still think it's probably the best league in the world, but it's not as good as it's been in previous years. So I've actually enjoyed Serie A a lot this year. Yep. And I hope that next season somebody can pick up the rights and market it more aggressively than BN has. Look, not trying to bag on BN. We know why. They have other priorities, and those other priorities drive better numbers. Mm-hmm. And then there's also a corporate relationship with PSG. But I think that there is a renaissance coming, at least for club football in Italy. National team, I don't know, but I've enjoyed the season in Serie A.
Yeah, it's still very niche, though. That's the thing. I mean, to me, like, the two races that are going down to the wire in Europe are the Turkish Super League, which there's a race, Galatasaray, Fenerbahce, Beşiktaş, and Istanbul going for it. And actually, BN Sports is showing a lot more of those games this weekend, and I'm sure the following weekend. So that's exciting. And then the Italian Serie A, of course, in terms of Juve and Napoli, and that's been exciting. But the vast majority of the other leagues, it's a one horse race. Barcelona, it's Manchester City, it's PSG, it's Bayern Munich. And what it's turned into is that it's turned into the Champions League, is it? And this Champions League has been more exciting in the latter stages than in a few years. But I think all the warning signs of what people have been saying for years in terms of the way things are heading, we're there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The Premier League, as one example, is three leagues. It's the team in first place, and then it's two through six, And then it basically seven through the bottom of the table, where any of those clubs could have, I mean, Everton was flirting with relegation, Newcastle were flirting with relegation, and all the way down. It's still exciting to me. It's not the best it's ever been by any means, but I think it's not just the Premier League. I think it's just in terms of all the leagues seem to be kind of heading in this direction.
These people want to argue with me about the Premier League. You can have sides like Burnley went 2 or 2.5 months without winning a game. And fantastic achievement from Sean Dyche and that side. Love that side. It's great they're going to finish seventh. They went about 2.5 months without winning a league match. Leicester went, until yesterday, went I don't know how long without winning a league match and was looking completely disinterested in the process, yet they're going to finish in the top half. Everton, we talked about how they started the season. Crystal Palace, let me tell you this. In the Premier League, the heyday of the Premier League, when people used to complain there was a big four, but the spots 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 were incredibly competitive, led by David Moyes' Everton teams that would generally finish fifth or sixth. A team like Crystal Palace would not have lost their first seven games and stayed up relatively easily.
Yeah, it's Frank de Boer is kind of a memory. It seems like years ago, but he was even, of course, managing the Palace at the beginning of the season. But what a turnaround there! But all right, Carter.
If you want that kind of parody, watch MLS, right? I mean, this is not what the top leagues in Europe were supposed to be about. But instead, because you've got the top teams so separated from the rest of the league, it seems like everybody has regressed to a mean.
But then parity is kind of boring, though, too. You know, I mean, I think you need to have
exactly. That's right. My point. Yeah. So I don't, you know, I don't see a whole lot of difference in watching. Now the quality is probably better and the atmospheres are better, but there isn't a huge difference now between watching Stoke versus West Brom, or that's a bad example, right? But Bournemouth versus Leicester versus some of these MLS matches, because it's just giving you kind of the similar kind of monotony, and there isn't sort of flare stars that you would see at the lesser sides. Even when you just a few years ago, Payet at West Ham, to name one example. So I think it's not the fault of the Premier League specifically or any of these leagues. It's just the way things have been going for years, as Champions League money and the elite clubs have continued to separate themselves from the bodies of their domestic leagues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that might be a good topic for a future podcast too, Kartik, to dive even deeper into this one, because there's, you know, money, where the money goes is oftentimes where the players go. The players will want to stay at kind of the upper clubs to play in the Champions League, to play on that stage. And oftentimes, whether it's the scouting or kind of talent recruitment, is better at those clubs too, just for the backroom staff.
Or live in London, Madrid, Milan, the glamorous cities. So
right.
That's another problem. We could get into this in another podcast, but there's so much criticism of Man City spending, Man United spending, Everton spending now has become it's come under the focal lens in the last 6 months. Liverpool obviously spends a lot of money. I think those four clubs in particular have to spend more money than the London clubs, the clubs they're competing with. Mm-hmm. And that's something that is and can't charge as much for tickets as the London clubs. That's something that is not thought about by so many American fans of the Premier League, who then pile on me when I make these kind of nuanced critiques. But you can't charge as much for tickets if you're Everton as you can if you're Arsenal. Yet Everton is having to spend more money to attract players to live in Liverpool than Arsenal would to live in North London. Something's, I think, going to have to be done eventually about this.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to jump around a little bit here to Kartik. So some of the other games I watched this past week was I watched the French Cup final, at least the last 20 minutes of it, was PSG against Le Herbier. And they were a third tier, I believe, in France. So, like, a really incredible story, making it all the way to the French Cup final and PSG winning it 2-0. One of the goals was a penalty scored in the latter stages of the match. Phil Shane and Matteo Bonetti commentating that one. And it was a great occasion. I enjoyed it from what I saw of it. The Swansea-Southampton game, I thought it was a little bit strange having Mark Clattenburg in the studio. It wasn't strange having him in the studio, but Rebecca was asking him about analysis about the incident with Buffon from the Real Madrid-Juventus semi-final. And that game just seems like so long ago now. It seems kind of out of the... It was interesting to hear what he had to say. But, I mean, with a game having been played, what, a few weeks ago, it seems to be kind of... We've moved on from there. Neil Ashton, again, pre-match, giving his insight is always always beneficial. Always get something out of Neil Ashton's reports. And again, like I said before, too, some good analysis by Carl Martino. So the little bits and pieces of the New York Red Bulls against NYCFC, really one-sided match. Didn't watch the whole thing and kind of turned that one off. And the Brighton-Man United game on Friday, it was hard to believe that this is the second-best team in the Premier League, going back to what you've been saying about kind of a tough season for the Premier League. But Manchester United were just extremely poor. Having said that, Brighton's a good team, and Chris Hughton has them organized really well. They're by no means a weak team. They're actually playing together really, really well as a unit. But still, you would think that Man United would put on a better performance than that. Anything else, Kartik, that stood out before we move on?
Yeah, I mean, I've watched now a couple of bits and pieces of LAFC games. There was a lot of controversy about LAFC not selling out this match against us on Saturday. I thought the atmosphere was still pretty good. So that atmosphere hasn't dropped off yet, but they're not. They're certainly not a ticket selling juggernaut like Atlanta was last year. And I think this is the dilemma for MLS. Again, in your elite markets, in your New Yorks, your Los Angeleses, you can only hype something so much, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, especially with some of the talk of some notable MLS signings this summer of what people would say are quote washed up European players. Guys that I think certainly can move the needle in terms of media interest in Wayne Rooney and Fernando Torres.
Yeah, I disagree with that, though, Kartik. I mean, I think move the needle for maybe one or two games, and then that's about it. I don't think that's going to be a long
no, term answer. Nothing's worked.
Yeah.
So I know there's people out there who like to criticize World Soccer Talk for our analysis of the television numbers in MLS. The needle hasn't really moved if you consider MLS is consistently expanding. So, the television rating, there are more raw viewers for MLS games on FS1 and ESPN now than there were when there were 16 teams in the league, right? With 23 teams. But going into larger markets like Philly, second team in LA, second team in New York, hasn't moved the needle. Atlanta hasn't moved the needle the way I think the marketing execs thought it would. And so they shifted from a model of signing a lot of older European players to younger Latin American players. That's improved the level of competition and the quality of play in MLS. No question about that. But now I think we're seeing, as teams are trying to make a splash again, going back, Zlatan may have been the harbinger of a new trend. Now we're seeing Rooney to DC United as they try and open their new stadium with a big star, and then Torres potentially to Montreal.
Yeah. To me, it's a little bit lazy from the owners in terms of, you mean, for DC United, they're not a very good team by any means. You would expect them to kind of invest more in promising youngsters or promising players from South America. But rather than they're going for the Wayne Rooney, which is going to be pull them in, instant star. You mean it'll sell season tickets. It'll help for the first few weeks of the season. But then what, though? But we'll get into the MLS TV ratings in a little bit. Some positive numbers from this past weekend. But we'll get into that in a little bit. All right, Kartik. Let's move on to TV streaming news and some big news that could have some massive implications for soccer fans in the United States.
Yeah, this is watch this space. I mean, there might be more that comes out even before you listen to this podcast. Comcast, the parent company of NBC Sports, is launching a bid to acquire 21st Century Fox, which includes Fox Sports. Comcast is planning a $60 billion all-cash bid to top Walt Disney on its deal to acquire most of 21st Century Fox. Fox's assets, most of 21st Century Fox's assets, if the U.S. government approves AT&T's acquisition of Time Warner, so there's more media consolidation going on. Comcast would also acquire 100% of UK satellite TV provider Sky as part of the deal, whose total value could be close to $100 billion, and Sky's board, by the way, has withdrawn its recommendation of the sale to Disney in lieu of this this bid. So that's pretty important too. That's just happened in the last 24 hours. Watch this space.
Yeah, so we talked about this one 2 weeks ago, Kartik, because you and I were talking about Fox's World Cup commentary team, and we were wondering why this move to have some B-level commentators. Why not go out and have these? I mean, there's definitely A-level talent in there too, but why not have them go out to Russia, commentate the games from there? And you and I both said that there's got to be something to this, because whether it's Fox trying to clean up their books and keep costs down, something's going on. And I think last week or days ago, we found out about this story here about Comcast. It's wow, Kartik. This, I mean, it's scary in many ways though too, because yes, Comcast owns NBC Sports as well as a ton of other media networks, etc. But Comcast is an ISP; it's an internet service provider. It's also a cable company, and it's also a media company. So if Comcast was able to acquire Fox Sports, 21st Century Fox, their empire would be incredibly massive. But it's scary because, I mean, if Comcast can control the ISP, I mean, your internet service, as well as the cable distribution, it could really go ahead and monopolize this whole environment in terms of sports TV rights, and say that, okay, in order to watch whatever sports it is, in soccer, if it's say the Champions League and the World Cup, it's only available through a exclusive. It's only available through cable. You have to have authentication through there, and if you're a Comcast subscriber, here's all the benefits of that. I don't know. It could end up being a good thing in some ways. I mean, if Comcast was able to acquire Fox Sports and Fox, they could maybe try to put their identity on Fox's coverage of soccer in the future. We won't know at this point, and they probably don't know that either. But if this does go through, this is going to have some huge implications. It makes you wonder, Kartik, whether or not the AT&T acquisition of Time Warner would go through. Because if that does go through, this opens up a whole can of worms, really.
Yeah, this media consolidation I'm generally not in favor of. But again, if they allow Time Warner to merge with AT&T, AT&T to buy Time Warner, then you almost have to let Comcast merge or acquire 21st Century Fox. You have to approve that. And you get into this kind of slippery slope of these media companies controlling. It'll be the same deal with AT&T. They're an ISP. They provide content. If they buy Time Warner, they'll own all these cable systems and satellite providers. It's the and actual programming. Same thing with Comcast. So it's a dangerous place to be. There is no cost savings, it seems, to consumers with all these things happening. But
well, that's the thing, though, right? Because at the end of the day, for consumers, how is it going to impact us? And it's probably going to mean, most probably, is our rates will go up. You mean,
yes.
If you want, if you're a Comcast subscriber, your rates are going up because now they offer, I mean, all of these channels and all of this access to all this great content and all this streaming and video on demand, and the rates go up because there's less competition out there. Actually, Kartik, on last week's podcast, we talked about Comcast's new policy, which does have a bearing on this, is that if you want to get the highest internet speeds through Comcast, you have to be a TV subscriber. So if you wanted to go just through Comcast just to get internet, you can't get the full high speed. You would get kind of a throttled speed.
Is it also true that Comcast is harassing people if they're using most of their data to upgrade their data plan? I've heard
that I have not heard
about that that would be for people particularly who cut the cord and are streaming a lot of programming. Yeah, so I guess you have to be a TV subscriber to get the higher thing, and so they're harassing people. That actually makes sense. So maybe that puts more context on what I've been hearing. But
right.
It's all now. I know people love to complain about their cable companies and their internet service providers. So I take some of it when people complain about DirecTV, which is AT&T. AT&T and Comcast with a grain of salt, but I'm hearing a lot of complaints about Comcast, just in general.
Yeah, for decades, though, Kartik. I mean, it's been this... I had Comcast for probably about 10 years, 15 years, and cut the cord about, what, a year and a half ago now, or maybe a year ago, and haven't missed it one bit. But I wouldn't say harassing, maybe pressuring customers into doing those things. But yeah, watch this space. That's going to be... I mean, at the end of the day, it could mean that NBC Sports could end up producing the World Cups in 2022 and 2026, or kind of producing it for Fox Sports. Or it could mean that Fox Sports, FS1 and FS2 rebrands as NBC One and NBC Two. I mean, the implications and the changes that could happen could be massive, and they could all not be good. I mean, it's quite possible. Now, moving on, Kartik, the lineup of commentators for the world feed of the 2018 FIFA World Cup has been finalized. They will feature Ian Dark, Peter Drury, John Roder, Kevin Keatins, Paul Dempsey, our old friend, Daniel Mann, Mark Tompkins, and John Helm. So this is for the world feed, and for us in the United States, we will not be able to hear any of these commentators because we will have Fox's commentators, mostly out of the LA studio, calling the games off the monitors, as well as the Telemundo commentators, including Andres Cantor in Spanish language. But for some countries, if you're lucky enough, probably in Canada and other countries around the world, where you just get the world feed, that's great. Ian Dark, Peter Drury, and others.
Wow, that's a lineup of heavy hitters, and those are the voices we're used to hearing on world feed of Premier League broadcasts and of Bundesliga broadcasts, so those same commentators.
Yep. All right, Kartik, so what's we talked about this a little bit already, but any other thoughts in terms of your first impressions of Bleacher Report Live?
Yeah, let's contrast it with ESPN Plus. I know ESPN Plus has a lot more programming, and you have to look and search and dig for some of the stuff with ESPN Plus. I mean, the MLS Live stuff is featured prominently, but I've now tried to watch ESPN FC multiple times at 6 o'clock when it's being aired live, and have not been able to find the link, and have had to wait an hour or two, more than an hour, actually more like 2 hours for it to be on demand, and then have found the thumbnail and have been able to click on it. So even though ESPN FC is, quote, live on ESPN Plus, I've had trouble accessing it. Maybe it's just my fault. But I'm having to search to find the live feed of it. And the on-demand pops up later. If you want to find the USL matches or the Football League matches, you have to dig. And generally, things are kind of put in terms of prominence as far as, I think, general sports audiences, even though it does know my preferences and at times soccer stuff will pop up. But I've had to do a lot of searching. I'm getting more used to it on ESPN Plus. It's been a couple of weeks now, but let's contrast that with Bleacher Report for a minute, Chris. Again, maybe it's because of a lack of content on Bleacher Report, but we talked about the Scottish Premiership. That stuff pops up right at the top of my Bleacher Report. I open Bleacher Report Live, it's there. And it's not just there when it's live. It's there today on Thursday. If I open Bleacher Report Live, it'll show me, hey, Friday, 2:45 p.m. Eastern time, this Scottish match or this Polish match. There's a couple other soccer things that have popped up. And it seems like if I open Bleacher Report Live, it's one giving me right away the soccer content, because it's logged that's what I'm logging on for, and two, it's the news feed is pertinent to me, whereas on ESPN you have to click on this on all these tabs. Now, that having been said, the layout for ESPN looks more graphically pleasing. It's done with the kind of ESPN style, which I think from a production standpoint, we all believe is, or many of us believe is as good as it gets. And maybe it's just because they have so much content and organizing so much content is difficult. But my first impressions are Bleacher Report Live I've liked and has been very convenient for me. And then the other point was the score bug, you mentioned it, the diamond with 89 will be in big font, and then you'll have 45 in small font and it's stacked. I've gotten used to that. And even to the point where, because you're watching on devices, on smaller devices, you're not watching on a TV, you're watching on your laptop or on your tablet, or in some cases, maybe even your phone, I know what minute it is, right? In the ESPN or NBC Sports Gold stuff, you have to squint to see what minute it is often. And a lot of times I see 60, 69, and I think it's 64, that sort of thing. So yep. There's no confusion there. So far, so good for Bleacher Report. And obviously, we're going to be watching a lot of it next year, because they're going to have the Champions League and Europa League.
Yeah, so Bleacher Report Live is free right now until, I believe, either the end of May or the end of June. So if you do want to check it out, I mean, again, as Kartik says, it doesn't have a lot of rights right now, but at least if you want to get comfortable with it and kind of see all the features and benefits, check that out. And then ESPN Plus is, what, $5 a month, and I think it offers, a seven-day trial. So you can go ahead and take a look at that. And for me personally, I'm going to subscribe to ESPN Plus, I think, as we get closer to the championship playoff final and probably semifinals, so I can kind of, when they have time to watch those games, that's something I'm going to kind of check out that service at that time. All right, Kartik, speaking of ESPN, or at least related to ESPN, a Perform Group has announced the appointment of John Skipper as executive chairman. Skipper previously served as president of ESPN for a number of years, where he worked for 20 years across all areas of the business. Now, this is a quote from the CEO of Perform, which, for those listeners who don't know, Perform is a massive digital company. They actually run Fox Soccer Match Pass, but also they run a lot of the streaming services for a lot of networks and club teams, and actually a lot of the websites in the United Kingdom. And the quote is from the CEO of Perform. He says, "Perform is rapidly expanding its role in sports media with significant investments in the best content and our own platform. We are now preparing to push forward with the expansion of DAZN, our live and on-demand streaming service, in more major markets around the world. DAZN is revolutionizing how fans watch their favorite sports. John is one of the most significant leaders in the history of our industry, and I am delighted that he's agreed to join me and the team to help take Perform to the next level of our ambitions." Now, it's important to say that, to mention that John Skipper's a huge soccer fan. He's a Tottenham Hotspur supporter, but don't hold that against him. But he's a soccer fan, so he knows the business. DAZN hasn't officially launched in the United States yet, but we've been talking about, you mean, the rights for Serie A and FA Cup and a lot of these other leagues. DAZN could possibly be one of those streaming providers that do acquire the rights to that. That's where everything's heading, from the Bleacher Report Lives, the ESPN Pluses, to DAZN and Go19, many other streaming services. I think more and more soccer is going to end up on those places, which is some good things, some bad things about that. But and this is another one of those, Kartik, watch this space, because I'm sure we're going to get some big news in the coming months.
Yeah, Perform is quite a player if you're into the kind of administration of soccer and soccer websites. They've been a player for a number of years, becoming a bigger player. So good to see John Skipper land there. Moving on, the Copa America 2019, as I'm sure many of our listeners noticed, will not have the U.S. or Mexico, more significantly Mexico. The impact for me on TV ratings and the rights fee here in the United States, I don't want to say catastrophic. And I know when you have these conversations in Miami, it's different than in the rest of the country. People in Miami tell me, "Oh, but people love watching Argentina and Brazil, and obviously there's a huge Colombian community throughout South Florida." But I just don't think it's a tournament that's terribly attractive for American audiences without Mexico in it. That's my opinion. That's based on seeing the television ratings through a number of years. Now, in fairness, the Euros do quite well on American television without any, quote, native team. So maybe Copa will do okay, but I think it's a pretty big blow for the tournament and the television rights in this country to not have Mexico in it.
Yeah, two things about this. One is I think a lot of it depends on the World Cup this summer. So if you got Brazil or Argentina or somebody that wins the tournament, then all of a sudden the Copa America 2019 TV rights become a lot more attractive. Seeing the World Cup champions now playing in their regional tournament. And the second thing is, this one to me feels like, again, it's a good fit for beIN Sports. I mean, beIN Sports has had Copa Americas in the past before, where there's been no Mexico and no United States. Well, actually, no United States at least. But to me, it's a good fit for them. Now, you mean the rights holder, MP and Silver, might be thinking, okay, this needs to be a Univision, this needs to be a Telemundo or Fox Deportes type of level. But that's the comfort level I'm thinking of as a beIN Sports.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you don't have Mexico in the tournament, it's difficult. Look, the U.S., I know this is the United States, but I don't think the U.S. national team really moves the needle unless they're uber successful. Mexico will always move the needle. I think it's tough to get a Univision or a Telemundo interested to tie up primetime programming on weeknights if Mexico is not in the tournament. So maybe Univision Deportes or Telemundo sticks it on Universo. But if you're going to do that, you might as well go to beIN, unless the rights fee is higher. But for me, it's a body blow not having Mexico in the tournament.
All right, just a couple more items to go in our news section. And the first one is that Andres Cantor has won his fifth Sports Emmy for Outstanding On-Air Sports Personality in Spanish at the 39th Annual Sports Emmy Awards for his work with Telemundo Deportes. This is the fifth Emmy that went to Cantor after calling the final match day of the CONCACAF World Cup qualifiers, where he called three matches simultaneously.
Yeah, and I got to watch it. I actually watched the final CONCACAF match day on Telemundo. It was amazing.
All right, Kartik, so one last news item here.
Yeah, so ESPN Plus, which we talked about, $5 a month, will showcase all playoff matches in the English Football League's top three divisions, the Championship, EFL League One, and EFL League Two, beginning with the semifinal round, which is actually today as we record, Thursday, May 10th, through Friday, May 18th. The four teams in each of the three divisions are competing for the remaining promotion spot in their respective divisions. At the completion of each English football season, three teams are promoted from the Championship to the Premier League and from EFL League One to the Championship. The top two teams on the league table gain automatic promotion, while the remaining four teams 3 through 6 in the standings compete in the playoffs, and it's a thrilling experience for the fans of the winning teams. It's just a thrill in general, and of course ESPN Plus is going to be your home for the football league next season too, so maybe if you're a fan of lower division soccer in England, subscribe now.
Yeah, this is huge because in the past, whether it's beIN Sports or ESPN3 at some stages too, we would not have every single one of these Football League playoff games. We would often have the Championship, yes, definitely. League One, most of the times. League Two, very rarely.
Very rarely.
So every single game, and we have the full schedule too at worldsoccertalk.com under the Championship TV schedule, and you can see all the listings and the times and stuff like that. This is going to be good. I mean, this is definitely, for me, it's one of the exciting times of the season. I really enjoy the whole experience of watching these teams battle out to see if they can make it to Wembley and make it all the way to getting promoted to the next level. So, yeah, good news from ESPN Plus there. All right, moving on to TV ratings, Kartik. Two whopping numbers this week, and that was for games played this past week. The first one is 1.5 million for Pumas against Club America on Univision, and this was on Wednesday, May 2nd. So this is last week for the Liguilla tournament, kind of the end of season tournament there. And we'll have to wait and see kind of what the weekend numbers are for that one too. But some big numbers there for Club America. And then you had the 1.4 million for El Clasico, Barcelona-Real Madrid on beIN Sports and beIN Sports en Español. The Spanish number for this one, the beIN Sports en Español was over 1 million. And then the number for beIN Sports, the English language channel, was, I believe, just under 400,000 there. So some decent numbers. And it helps, too, that it was a 2:45 kickoff on Sunday. And even though Real Madrid was out of the race well before this match, still decent numbers, still really impressive numbers, I think, Kartik.
Yeah, the great numbers for the El Clasico. I had less interest in it, quite frankly, because, again, to me, it was a dead rubber. I'll admit I didn't watch it, which it was blasphemy for a lot of people. But I did. There were games in Italy going on, and actually it was Sunday. I can't remember. I watched. I was watching the Premier League download shows on NBC. Actually, on NBCSN, which were running simultaneously. Yeah, I mean, I just didn't have that much interest this time because I did think it was a dead rubber. But of course, obviously, I've gone back and seen all the clips and the subsequent analysis. But some decent numbers this week, obviously, better numbers for MLS this week than the previous few weeks.
Yeah, definitely. So the Dallas LA Galaxy game was 384,000 viewers on Univision's channels, which is a great number. The New York Derby between the Red Bulls and NYCFC had 334,000 viewers on ESPN. FS1.
I turned off after 15 minutes. One-sided. So yeah. I may not have counted in that number.
Right. Same with me. And then I don't think FS1 had a game this past weekend, which is good for FS1 because their numbers have been poor for Major League Soccer. But all in all, a good weekend for Major League Soccer there. Moving on to listener mailbag, just one comment this week, and this is from Shy. He sent this in through email, and he says, as always, love the pod and appreciate all you do. What can you tell us about the different payment options for the individual streaming services? For example, with Sling TV, you can only use a US credit card options for payment, while on DirecTV Now, there is the option of PayPal, which allows you to use several types of payment options to have an account. Therefore, that makes the service more accessible to more users. Do you know how these different payment options are contracted and or why the services would elect one over the other? This does influence who is allowed access, so I thought I would ask. So, Shai, I don't know the specific answers to those questions, but I can say that, for example, with Sling TV, making sure that you have a U.S. credit card or a credit card that's registered in the United States, that's really to ensure that that you don't have people from overseas. Say you're from England and you want to go ahead and watch games using Sling TV. All the games. All the Premier League games. All the games that you don't have access to in the UK, and you're using a UK password, but then you're using a VPN, like a virtual private network, to appear that you're actually accessing Sling TV through the US. Now, if you use a UK pass, a credit card, that will red flag and say, okay, give you an error message. So I think that's one of the major reasons why the Sling TV wants it to be a credit card that's registered in the US, as well as making sure that you're accessing the site from the US to ensure that people from outside of the US cannot access it because they don't have the rights to it. And they could get into a lot of trouble for that. Now, DirecTV Now, like you mentioned, has the option of PayPal. So they're probably taking a little bit of a risk there in terms of maybe it's easier if you have a PayPal address to be outside of the country and use a VPN and still watch the programming. I think it comes down to that more than anything. It's not in terms of which payment options are the best, but which ones are the most secure, and also ensuring that people can only access the content that they're allowed to access. I think that comes down to the major reason why those things are the way they are. So, if listeners, if you want any advice on anything in regards to watching soccer, and or if you have any questions or any feedback, or if you disagree with us about anything vehemently or agree with anything too, you can always reach us via email through web at worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter at worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post comments on the website, worldsoccertalk.com. Now, Kartik, where can listeners find you on Twitter if they want to find out what you're up to and some of your comments about how poor the Premier League is?
KKFLA737 on Twitter. And yes, I think I'm backing off that whole Premier League thing, because anytime you criticize the Premier League, it's like a lynch mob comes and attacks you. And they all also point out how terrible La Liga and the Bundesliga are compared to the Premier League, which clearly indicates to me they're not watching those leagues. But okay, anyway, you guys have won the debate. KKFLA737 on Twitter.
Yeah, to me, the Premier League is like my favorite girlfriend. It's someone that I've known for many, many years. I remember when she was great. She was hot. She was wonderful. and now she's getting a little bit older, and she's still fun. She's still wonderful, but she's not as perfect as she used to be.
Yeah, that's my analogy too. It is my favorite league, and I keep pointing out to people, I watch far more Premier League than all these other leagues, but I haven't shut my mind up and bought into all the kind of media propaganda that this is the greatest show on earth when I flip on a random La Liga game and the touches are better and the tactics are better and there aren't all these bad giveaways in midfield. So anyway, discussion for another time. I'm tired of it, actually.
Yeah, for me personally, I'm just enjoying as much soccer as I can watch, and I'm flipping back and forth between a whole bunch of different leagues and a whole bunch of different games. And if it's good, great. If not, I'll move on to another game. And that's the great beauty of this, is that we have more access and more choices than ever before, and I love it. Even though I'm depressed about my team, I love it. All right, well, thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audioboom, and worldsoccertalk.com. Also, if you are a Google Assistant or Google Home user, you can say, "Hey Google, play the World Soccer Talk podcast," and it will play. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review. And Kartik, going into the final weekend of the Premier League, as well as some of the final weekends of some of the other leagues and wrapping up some of the other stages, what should they do this weekend?
Enjoy your football.